I'm Anita Lustria, and this is Faith Conversations. I am very excited to have with me on the podcast someone whose work I fully believe in, and that is Suzanne Stabile. And partly because I'm an Enneagram trainer myself, so anything with Enneagram attached to it, I've got to buy, I've got to read, I've got to look at, because I really believe in this personality profile system on so many levels. It's so layered, and we'll get into that today. But let me introduce Suzanne to you. If you've been a longtime Faith Conversations listener, you've heard her here on the podcast with me before, but it's been a while. She is a highly sought-after speaker, teacher. She's internationally recognized in the Enneagram community as a master teacher, having conducted over 500 workshops. And many of you probably own the bestseller that she is co-author of, and that is The Road Back to You. And I'm grateful for InterVarsity Press for putting that book out. I really think that was a game changer in the Christian community. And we might talk about that just a little bit today. So I want to welcome back to Faith Conversations Suzanne Stabile. Suzanne, welcome.
Thank you, Anita. It's good to be with you.
Well, it's good to have you. And yeah, let me say a quick housekeeping thing. One, I love hearing from listeners. I've been hearing from a lot of them lately, and some of them may have questions after today's podcast. And if they do, that's wonderful. They can always email me at producer@anitalustria.com. producer@anitalustria.com. So would love to hear from you there. And longtime listeners to the podcast know that's also how you can contribute to the podcast's ongoing ministry on PayPal, by using that same email address. So, Suzanne, I mentioned The Road Back to You, and I know you co-authored that with Ian Cron. I think that was a game changer for the Christian community. I had been reading and learning about the Enneagram since 2002 or 2003, somewhere in there, but had always come up against resistance. People saying, "Oh, I don't know if it's Christian," or as if there aren't beautiful transcendent truths that we can grab onto. And all, as a wonderful professor of mine back in my Moody Radio days would say, "All truth is God's truth, and no matter where we find it." And I heartily believe that. But speak to that resistance, and did you see a shift with your book, The Road Back to You, coming out?
I definitely saw a shift. I've been teaching for 25 years, and I think perhaps culturally we are less afraid and more afraid than we've ever been.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
And everything is dualistic by nature. Our paradox wouldn't be, right?
Yes.
And I think there's been enough experience of people getting to know people who aren't like them because of social media and because of movies and television and all the things that are so prevalent, that it opened the door a little bit for difference, which opened the door for the Enneagram. Mm-hmm. And I of the three worldviews that I talk about a little bit in terms of how we see God, I think there are people who see God as God created everything and now we're kind of on our own. A second would be that God created everything and God is a rewarding, punishing God, and there are hoops that you have to jump through and ways that you have to behave. And the third, which is the worldview that I ascribe to, which is that God created everything. God is all grace, all forgiving, all benevolent. And if you, I've said for a long time, I couldn't fall in love with a God that I'm afraid of. Mm. Yeah. And once you get over that question about who you have to be or what your perception is of who you have to be, I think maybe only then can you get to know who you are.
Hmm. Yeah.
And I think that has prepared us for a time of self-understanding and self-knowledge and a desire to understand other people.
I agree.
So I think the world was ready and it was the right time for the book.
You know, it's interesting because some of the early reformers, I look back at the Scottish reformers and then some of the early reformers here in, I think of, you know, Christian reformers, and Calvin being one of them, who said, but not much was talked about, or this quote was not oft repeated until more recent years. Without knowledge of self, there is no knowledge of God. Without knowledge of God, there is no knowledge of self. Now, I think that's a paraphrase, but that's the essence of what he and many others spoke of many, many years ago. I don't know how we lost that, but I think because of losing that, there's been, boomers, my generation are, you know, a muddied mess as they've grown up in a more conservative evangelicalism that has lost sight of knowing self. What do you say to that?
Joe and I, you know, my husband's a former Roman Catholic priest who's been a United Methodist pastor for the last 30 years. And on and off, we have an Institute for Spiritual Formation, which is a two-year program. People come from all over the country, and they come four times a year. And the first hurdle in spiritual transformation for a high percentage of those people is or was to stop being unhappy with themselves. It's like the first hurdle is, I'm not okay, and I'm not good enough, and I'm not. And if they could get over that hurdle, then the second hurdle was family of origin, people I work with, all that. Mm-hmm. And I think the Enneagram was such a good part of that institute because it helped you with those two things. It helped you embrace who you are because Enneagram wisdom teaches you that the best part of you is also the worst part of you.
Yes.
And it helped you get over the hurdle of the fact that the people who are in your family are very different from you. They see differently. They don't think like you do. They're not from the same generation that you're from, et cetera. And I think those two things are a gift from the Enneagram so that we can not only know ourselves but embrace ourselves, mm-hmm. so that we can clear the table to figure out who we are in relation to God and what God would have us do with our lives, which surely isn't just about what I'm supposed to do with me.
Yeah, right. Preach. Okay.
Yeah.
Preach. You know, it's interesting. I look back, and this is 2003, so you can count the years, 13 years ago. I went through a course at a church that I attended for many years in the Chicagoland area before moving to Sarasota. And it was a spiritual formation course, you know, like you're talking about. And in the context of this 9-month course, sort of went with the school year, the Enneagram was one of the units. And yeah. Adele Calhoun was one of the pastors who taught this to me. And I look back and I think the gift of the fact that she was a spiritual director and my first spiritual director many years ago, and that she taught me the Enneagram, you know, I thank God for crossing her path and happening upon that church where I also met my husband, which I'll say to you, a former Catholic grade school, high school, college, and graduate school, but he then became a Protestant minister. So he didn't go all the way Joe's direction and become a Catholic priest first, but that's interesting. He had that background. Yes, so I'm very grateful for this entering my heart and soul. And I will say that Larry Crabb actually stoked the fires in me just before I came to that spiritual formation class called Growing Your Soul. You know, who wouldn't sign up for something called Growing Your Soul? I don't know.
Right. And I think there's a really important piece in that, too, that growing our souls is our business. I kind of grew up in the United Methodist Church believing that my soul was done. I could damage it, but I don't remember thinking I could grow it.
Oh, that's
right?
Fascinating. Okay. Mm-hmm. Wow.
So then soul work became a part of my life. And, you know, I'm 67, but soul work kind of became part of my life in my mid-30s, and I kind of thought, man, I have a lot to do here to have a deeper understanding of who I am and who God is.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I grew up an old soul, kind of. I mean, at 5 years old, I was engaged with my faith. One of those, you know, little people really grabbing on to things, asking questions of my parents about faith issues. And but so maybe at a younger age, I became dry and a little bit like I was in the wilderness and feeling like there's got to be more. And that's sort of what led me down that path of soul work and growing my soul and finding out who on earth am I? Whoa. And, you know, and that's the journey.
Yeah. The Enneagram is based on the three centers of intelligence, thinking, feeling, and doing. And actually, Joe and I are doing some new work right now about how to introduce to different denominations concepts and ideas about how does worship work if you're a thinking dominant person? Ooh. And how does your worship style work if you're feeling dominant? And how does it work if you're doing dominant? Mm. And if you're not speaking to all three through a worship experience, then people are left out every time they worship your community, right?
Oh, yes, yes. When are you teaching this and where? Let me come. I've got to go.
Well, we're developing right now, and it'll be on our website, so you'll know.
That's fantastic, which I'll have your website in my show notes, but for someone who is listening already with pen in hand, what is it?
LifeInTheTrinityMinistry.com.
And you and Joe have been all about that for how long? As long as you've been doing Enneagram, or how long has Life in the Trinity Ministry?
It preceded Enneagram. Okay. We started it in the Catholic Church in 1985.
Wow.
And when Joe left the priesthood, we brought it with us, and then he and I married, and we, it has gone through a lot of change.
Sure.
Which is
good.
Good, I think.
Absolutely.
I think it's always good.
Yes.
Always good. And we have our own center in Dallas, and, you know, a lot of good stuff's happening here. I'm thankful to be part of it.
Ah, that's wonderful. Love it. Well, that's exciting to hear. So anything that's mentioned during the podcast today, if you don't have a pen handy, I'll have that in the show notes. So just know that. You can always go to AnitaLustria.com and find everything listed out. So one of the things I didn't say, Suzanne, I introduced you and I have mentioned your first Enneagram book, because you did this a lot of years and were afraid to put it down in print, or just, I don't know why, you decided not to do that for many years, to not write on the Enneagram. Why was that?
Honestly, it wasn't fear. It was commitment. I was very committed to the fact that for centuries and centuries, the Enneagram had been an oral tradition. Mm. And I'm not a proponent of any of the tests or any of the indicators. And I was just a purist, and I was only going to teach it orally. And, you know, never say never. I am glad that the two books are available, and I'm working on a proposal for a third, and I really believe in both of them, and I still believe in oral tradition for Enneagram teaching.
I love that. I love that.
But I got to a point where I was turning down opportunities to speak, and so I thought, well, if I can be a part of a book and then have my own with the pathfulness, that is what I believe to be true, then I'm good.
And let me get that title out too. The latest book that is yours is The Path Between Us, an Enneagram Journey to Healthy Relationships. Love that subtitle. Again, The Path Between Us, published by InterVarsity Press, and we're going to get into some of the content of that here in just a few moments. I love that. The fact is, you can only stand up in front of so many people. Even the largest groups, you know, you can only be able to stand there and teach it orally to so many. So I'm really glad that at some point you were convinced to put pen to paper and to grace us with some books. Really appreciate that. I did coursework with Jerry Wagner, and you know that
so
name.
And yeah, his work is so good.
And I appreciated him and just the ability, because it, at the time, was in my backyard in the Chicagoland area. But anyone interested, again, give your website.
lifeinthetrinityministry.com.
Yeah. So you can find out more there about all things Suzanne Stabile, of course. And do you have a separate website that is just yours?
Lifeinthetrinityministry.com. SuzanneStabile.com is there.
Okay. So you can find, you're there. Yeah.
Yeah. One of those two places you'll find
beautiful
more than you could want to know.
Good. Well, I'll have them both, just so you know. Well, the road back to you, just to give a differentiation between that and your new book, The Path Between Us, what's the difference? And then we'll kind of launch into some things from The Path Between Us.
I think The Road Back to You is a great primer.
Yes.
I think it's a good foundation, and it's a really good place to start.
Yes.
And I think it's deep enough that it is fair to the depth of the wisdom of the Enneagram, and it doesn't trivialize it in ways that I think are misrepresentative of the tradition.
Okay.
The Path Between Us is, from my perspective, the next step, mm-hmm. and it's the next step because it's about, okay, well, what are you going to do with the Enneagram? It's the same thing I was saying about what are you going to do with your life? Are you just going to know you?
Right.
And I think we are in a relationship crisis.
Say more. I agree 100%.
Culturally, I just think relationships have come up on hard times, and I think it's because we don't have good tools to know how to work through difference. I don't think we even basically understand that there is such difference in how we see.
Let me ask a clarifying question. Is that because these things aren't being taught? Were these things taught in our generation, or did we just have more sensibilities and sensitivities that don't exist today? Which is it?
Well, I think Richard Foster answered it in the 1970s. And he said, the new tools of the devil are muchness and manyness and noise and crowds and hurry.
Ooh.
How great is that?
Whoa, okay.
And that was before technology.
Oh.
And so I think relationships don't come in sound bites. Solutions
yes.
to problems don't come in paragraphs. And we all need tools. And we need to be mindful of difference that we were never taught about. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I really grew up very interested in people. I think in part because I was adopted. And so I was paying attention to behavior because I didn't look like anybody.
Okay.
So I wanted to know who I behaved like, right?
Right.
But I think we are now divided not into tribes even, but into camps.
Mm.
And I think our way of making the groups that we're a part of cohere is to have a common enemy.
Mm.
And I think cohering around something positive takes a lot more time and a lot more energy than cohering around a common enemy. And so now we're mostly over against.
Yeah, and I would add time takes a lot more time, a lot more energy, and I think a lot more courage.
I think that too. And I think fear is the enemy of relationships.
Yes.
And many other things, probably. So I don't think good relationships are being modeled very often. And that's from the top down. And I'm very concerned with disrespectful language, with judgment, with dualistic thinking. Richard Rohr taught me the Enneagram and many other things.
Mm.
And his work on non-duality is super important.
How do you walk the line between speaking up, standing up for what you believe to be right,
mm-hmm.
Without being disrespectful? Is that the question I'm trying to ask? Anyway, you can take that wherever.
Okay, here's where I'm going to take it. I live in Dallas, and there's a pastor here in Dallas who's well known. And he and I probably don't agree on anything much. I do respect him because he's very committed to what he believes, as am I. But my way of trying to answer what I think your question is to say this.
Yeah.
Until I can call and invite him to go have lunch with me and not need him to believe what I believe,
right,
then I am him.
Okay.
And I think we've lost our ability to get together.
Mm-hmm.
And talk about things that we don't necessarily agree on.
Yes.
And be teachable during that conversation.
Yes.
So that you're not, you could move an inch or two if somebody's point
yes.
makes sense to you.
Well, so I think in relationship, a piece that we have lost is the ability to listen well.
Right. And I think we believe that if we talk somebody into seeing things the way we see them, they're going to want to respond to those things the same way we respond. And that's just not true.
Yeah, that's
and the Enneagram addresses both of those things.
Oh, that's
both of them.
That's good. Yeah, I like that. Ooh, okay. Well,
I don't know if Enneagram stances are a part of your world, and if you work with stances much, or if you know a lot about that.
No.
But triads, which we're all in, find ourselves in one of three triads, and those are determined by which is dominant, thinking, feeling, or doing.
Mm-hmm.
Stances are determined by which is repressed, thinking, feeling, or doing.
Interesting. Okay. All right.
And
do you talk about stances?
Uh-huh.
In the past? Okay. I'm going to dig into that. All right.
And I think stances are where the magic is in the Enneagram. I think that's where all the work is. And that is in bringing up your repressed center.
Mm. Yeah.
So we're doing life with, the analogy is like a three-legged stool that's missing a leg.
Yep.
And we're doing life, all of us, with using two of the three centers of intelligence. And so we're always off balance, and we're tired, and we have a difficult time relating to people who don't share the same dominant center of intelligence that we do.
Mm. Wow.
So feeling people have huddled together, and doing dominant people have huddled together, and there's less and less respect for a need for balance of all three.
Mm. That's interesting. Yeah, I mean, I see that playing out in the broader culture. That's interesting to think about this. Wow. Okay, I've got a little homework to do. I'm thankful for you talking about that. When you
can I give you one more piece of homework?
Yes, of course I do.
Because it's one of the things that I think we really can do something with if we work at it. The tradition that I came through believes that the numbers are not equally divided among the population. So there are really good teachers who I have a lot of respect for who believe that we're pretty evenly divided over the nine numbers. The tradition that I was taught is that a high percentage of people in the world are sixes on the Enneagram.
Hmm.
And after sixes, the next greatest number is nines. And then from there, there is a more even distribution. And that's globally, not just in
That's interesting, America. Not just here. Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe, and as you, I'm sure you know, the passion for sixes is fear,
mm-hmm.
which would better be labeled anxiety because sixes are concerned about possible future events.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that
I live with a six.
Yeah. Okay. So all local news in my experience, and I live in a big metroplex, is aimed at anxiety. And I now think that
people, I think all national news is as well.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of churchgoers find themselves in a position where they are perhaps intentionally or unintentionally manipulated by fear. And we've got to pull out of that if we're going to find space for one another. Mm. We can't be afraid of one another and embrace difference at the same time.
Okay, can we like take a pause now while I think about that? Yeah, yeah. Dead air doesn't work real well. So isn't that good? Isn't that interesting?
I think we all need to think about it because so much is fear-based.
Yes.
And so Merton said, there's grace upon grace and mercy upon mercy, and it's falling on all of us.
Yeah.
And I think in the West, there is angst and anger and anxiety, and it's falling on all of us.
Oh, boy, that's good. That's really good. And so I think two of the very negative byproducts of that are a group of people listening nonstop to news and then a group of people with their heads in the sand not listening to any.
Right.
So, yeah.
And nonstop news listeners are usually listening to one side or another where all opinions are the same.
That's interesting.
So I do a boot camp every year, an Enneagram boot camp in August in Texas. So that weeds out a lot of people. And
okay.
It's the first weekend in August every year. And it's one of my favorite events of the year. And this year, halfway through boot camp, because I was teaching about context, I told everybody in the room that they had to come back after lunch and sit at a different table than the one they were sitting at previously, and they could only move with one person that they knew.
Okay.
And we've gotten so much feedback about how that changed conversations. It changed what was talked about. It changed their mind about some things. And we aren't doing that. We listen to people who agree with us. We talk to people who agree with us. And we're disrespectful, and we disregard people who don't.
And I'll go on to say who look like us.
Yeah.
Act like us. Just fill out the picture. That's all. Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, I agree.
Very scary.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, and I think it's been a uprooting from Chicago and moving to Sarasota, Florida has been a great adventure, certainly. So, and a lot of why we came was to be close to my aging parents. Sure. So there was some purpose in the move and some other things thrown in there as well. But, you know, starting over, the plus side, there's a whole lot of stuff that inherently goes with transitions, and it's been a big one. But the plus side is, I just lost what the plus side is, which obviously says something to me. But
I'm guessing you were going to talk about embracing difference culturally.
Yes. That's absolutely true. And it helps you name what you know to be true when you come up against something that is a little shocking or, you know, whatever the case may be, because that's going to happen when you move somewhere new. And when you don't have any of your old relationship groups, friendship groups, whatever, to lean on. And, you know, when it's all new, you have to start, this is what I was going to say, you start reforming and reframing and rethinking some of who you are.
Right.
And I will also add, and who God is, which is always a good, the expansion of your view of God, my view of God, that's always a good thing. Not always an easy thing, but always a good thing. And so there's all of that that happens too in that process.
Several authors that I've read over the years have said that if God hates all the same people that you hate, then you can be sure that you've created God in your image.
Yes. Yeah.
And I think we're just way too divided. I think it's unnecessary, and I it just has to get better. It has to.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that the path between us will help with that.
Well, I think so. Because I love the fact that this is all about the Enneagram in healthy relationships,
right?
You know, not just relationships, but healthy relationships. That descriptor, I think, is a really important one in the subtitle, for sure. Does everyone, you know, this might be helpful for someone newer to the Enneagram. I have a sense that everyone who first kind of determines what their Enneagram type is kind of goes, ugh, really? That's not the one I wanted to be. I feel like we all do that when we sort of sit with and decide who we think we are in the type system.
Right. I agree with that.
Is that true? Okay.
And I, you know, a lot of people say the Enneagram is taught from a negative position. But here's what I have to say about that. I don't know anybody who knows themselves based on what they get right.
Yes.
And based on what they like about themselves.
Yes.
Not anybody. We all know ourselves by what we get wrong.
Yeah.
And we particularly know our internal terrain, where you and I would do what we call soul work, by what we get wrong.
Yes.
But people, when I first started teaching, so that's 25 years ago, people pushed and pushed and pushed me to teach a positive Enneagram. And so I finally offered an event and taught a positive Know Your Number. And we taught it for free because I knew that people were not going to leave knowing their number.
That's great. I love it.
And they didn't.
That's so funny. I mean, yes, exactly.
Yeah. It's just not how we know ourselves.
I was just reading a specific type to a woman yesterday, a friend, and immediately, you know, she didn't hear anything but the negative. She goes, "Oh yeah, that's it." Just yeah. as you said, yeah. you know, which I've seen over and over. Yeah. What's the important piece that we really need to know about the path between us? What's the best way that it helps us in relationships? Is it looking at how what conflict looks like, or how I'm different from the other types, or you know, what is that part? I mean, I know you address all different aspects, and I don't know if you can say one's better than another, but do people gravitate toward a particular area of relationship help in the book, The Path Between Us?
I think the lists that are there at the things that are highlighted in the chapters and the lists that are at the end of the chapter are very helpful to people. And here's the deal. My daughter, who's an 8 on the Enneagram, who's 40, called me maybe 3 years ago or 4, early one morning, and said, "Mom, I don't really think that the golden rule applies to 8s. Well, you know, that's something that an 8 would say, right? So I thought, well, tell me more about that. And she said this: "I treat people exactly like I want to be treated, and it doesn't go well." And I think the reality is that people want to be treated the way they want to be treated.
Yes.
And if you don't know what that is,
it's really good.
If you don't know how people can hear you, if you don't know how people need to be given certain kinds of information, if you don't know what people need from you, then you're at a real loss in doing your part in a relationship. Mm. And the same is true if they don't know that about you. And I think I did a really good job in The Path Between Us teaching that.
That's great.
So there's a list of do these things with this number, with all 9 numbers,
mm-hmm.
and don't do these things. And if you do these things, then. And I think it's a pretty good guide that people tell me now that the book's only been out since mid-April, but people tell me on the road that they literally for a while in their relationships had the book open and would say, "Okay, now I want to tell you this. I'm going to try to do it this way so that you can hear it." And it worked. And so they kept thinking, "This is working. Things are better. This is working." And I'm very hopeful about that, because the people you care about the most, if you use the book as a guide for 6 or 8, 10 months, then you'll know what to not do anymore if you want it to be effective, and what to do.
I love that. And of course, like any good lover of the Enneagram, what did I do? I opened right up to my own chapter first,
sure,
of course, my
sure.
own number. I was looking through the book. I'm like, what do I have underlined? Lots of stuff in the very beginning, and then all kinds of stuff under my own number.
Sure.
Everybody
did that.
Yeah, I think, thank you. It's good to know. I mean, that's what I assume, too, that people kind of run to their own number, and I'm not surprised by that at all. One of the things I want to make sure gets mentioned as well is this study guide. Because I do think that one of the things that's helpful is doing almost anything in community. You know, maybe not everything, but almost anything. Talk about the study guide, why you put it together, and how it's the most helpful to use it.
Okay. Well, our center in Dallas is called the MICA Center. And our byline for the center is a place for solitary work that cannot be done alone.
I love that. Solitary work that cannot be done alone. I have to repeat that. All right.
Yeah. I don't think we get very far when we commit even, I'm going to change this about me. Well, the answer is no, you're probably not. So, you know, one basic teaching, and then I'll get to your question, but one basic teaching from me is we have to allow habitual, predictable, ineffective behavior to fall away. Not make it go away.
Yeah, that's
because if you're trying to make it go away, you use your personality to do that.
Right.
And what we want is less personality and more essence, more of who we essentially are without all of this dressing that we use to make our way in the world, which is necessary. So as we think about that and the work that could be done with the book, a study guide made sense for groups of people to get together. And there's nothing better than being in a group of people who have different Enneagram numbers if you want to learn about how other people see the world.
Yeah.
Because it's not the way you see it.
Yes.
And so the study guide, our son works with us full time now, and he did a group here at our center. And they loved it so much, he's going to do another one. And
nice.
We're actually asking people who are starting study guide groups around the country to let us know that
nice.
They're doing that.
Okay.
Because why have a book about relationships that you don't process in relationship, right?
Yes, it's good. I appreciate that.
Because then it just becomes about you again and how people are going to treat you and all that.
Yeah, and I think you said this already, but I also love the little sidebar that you have in the chapter with every type, how that type and all of the other works together with all of the others or relates to all of the others. I think that's a real powerful part of the book. What should we not miss? I mean, sometimes I talk to people about a new book, and I've loved this conversation today because it's been broader than just about the path between us, but everything that we've said certainly feeds into the importance of the Enneagram and specifically an Enneagram journey to healthy relationships. But what do you want to make sure people do not miss in our conversation today? And, you know, if they're picking up the path between us, what do you think want them to be sure and walk away with? As you wrote the book, you're like, okay, I hope if they don't get anything else, they get this.
Right. Well, the number one thing I want people to get is that these 9 ways of seeing the world somehow include everybody on the planet. And that's beyond my understanding. But they do. And your number is well honed by the time you're 5. It never changes.
Oh, okay.
So there is no changing your number because you like another one better. And and the great thing about the Enneagram that's different than all of the other tests or all of the other personality systems or all of the other things that are like it is that it's not static. Mm-hmm. And the goal is, number one goal is for you to know yourself and be healthier in your number. Because that's the best gift that you have to offer every relationship that you're in. After that, then the goal is to learn how other people take in information and how they hear and what they need from you. Mm. And I think the complexity of 9 ways of seeing the world is somehow overcome in Enneagram wisdom by the reality that most of what you hear or read, on some level, you already knew, you just haven't articulated. And so it's like coming home to things that you already know.
Yeah.
So instead of saying, for me, instead of saying Joe and I are so similar and so different, I can now say Joe and I are both other referenced. We both care a great deal about making the world a better place. And yet I care so much what other people think. Joe's a 9. He doesn't care. I think we should do something. Joe thinks we should wait and see how things play out. And the things that we've had trouble over, we don't have one single thing that hasn't been made easier for us by knowing how the other sees. Not a single thing. Now, that doesn't mean we still fight and argue and do all the stuff. But we stop sooner. And we say less that we can't unsay. And we're smarter about how we move forward with one another.
I love that. That's a great illustration of how helpful the Enneagram is. I was thinking about Mike and I, my husband and I, and I think we laugh a lot about the way we do certain things.
Right.
And, you know, I'll often tell a story about him buying a new watch, which it's not new anymore. Maybe it's 8 years old. But how many times he had to go back to the store as a 6 to look at it, think about it. Maybe, and then buy it. And I still laugh uproariously about that watch buying experience, which is just sort of a metaphor for, you know, caution and
how he sees the world.
It's just fascinating to me. And thankfully, we do have a good time laughing at it. I got plenty to laugh. There's plenty for him to laugh at about me. Trust me.
Well, don't you think because we all fall in one of those 9 spaces that actually we can laugh at ourselves because we know there are millions of other people who do the same silly stuff that we do?
Absolutely.
And I think we don't take ourselves so seriously.
Yes.
And you can say things in a relationship using the Enneagram and using a number that you would never, ever say otherwise.
And I'll say, too, I think that some of this is a product of maturity and age, but just because people age does not mean they are mature and know themselves. So there's got to be work done and learning things to be processed. And I think the Enneagram is a fantastic way to move forward in life, to know yourself and to be in better and healthy relationship with others. So Suzanne Stabile, author of The Path Between Us, another wonderful Enneagram book. Suzanne, thank you. Thanks for your time. Thanks for sharing with us on the podcast.
Thank you, Anita. It was great.
To everyone else, I say keep the conversation going.